So tonight I thought to do things a little bit back to front and read a short couple of chapters from Ajahn Chah, from his book A Taste of Freedom, because I was reading this the other day and I found that the teachings and the reflections, reading them and then meditating, was actually really helpful. So I'll read it and then we'll do a silent meditation, maybe just with a little few pointers afterwards based on some of the things in this reading. Because often we sit first and then hear the reading. I actually found the other way around was quite helpful, you know. So let's just listen to the words. As I said, they can be quite powerful in pointing us to the Dharma. And then we'll go into a brief guided meditation afterwards. So this first small chapter is entitled Training This Mind. It's also printed in another tradition, a translation, if you're looking at, called About This Mind, which is how I originally knew it. It's a very succinct teaching. Training this mind. Actually, there's nothing much to this mind. Sorry, before I get into it. So yeah, just bring your mind into a state of receptivity in listening to Ajahn Chah's words and use it as really a guidance for deepening your meditation before we sit more in silence. I'll start again. Training this mind. Actually, there's nothing much to this mind. It's simply radiant in and of itself. It's naturally peaceful. Why the mind doesn't feel peaceful right now is because it gets lost in its own moods. There's nothing to the mind itself. It simply abides in its natural state, that's all. That sometimes the mind feels peaceful and other times not peaceful is because it has been tricked by these moods. The untrained mind lacks wisdom. It's foolish. Moods come and trick it into feeling pleasure one minute and suffering the next. Happiness, then sadness. But the natural state of a person's mind isn't one of happiness or sadness. This experience of happiness and sadness is not the actual mind itself, but just these moods which have tricked it. The mind gets lost, carried away by these moods, with no idea what's happening. And as a result, we experience pleasure and pain accordingly, because the mind has not yet been trained. It still isn't very clever. And we go on thinking that it's our mind which is suffering or our mind which is happy, when actually it's just lost in its various moods. The point is that really this mind of ours is naturally peaceful. It's still and calm, like a leaf that is not being blown away by the wind. But if the wind blows, then it flutters. It does that because of the wind. And so with the mind, it's because of these moods, getting caught up with thoughts. If the mind didn't get lost in these moods, it wouldn't flutter about. If it understood the nature of thoughts, it would just stay still. This is called the natural state of the mind. And why we have come to practice now is to see the mind in this original state. We think that the mind itself is actually pleasurable or peaceful, but really the mind has not created any real pleasure or pain. These thoughts have come and tricked it, and it has got caught up in them. So we really have to come and train our minds in order to grow in wisdom, so that we understand the true nature of thoughts rather than just following them blindly. The mind is naturally peaceful. It's in order to understand just this much that we have come together to do this difficult practice of meditation. So on meditation, being the next reflection chapter, to calm the mind means to find the right balance. If you try to force your mind too much, it goes too far. If you don't try enough, it doesn't get there. It misses the point of balance. Normally the mind isn't still. It's moving all the time. We must strengthen the mind, making the mind strong and making the body strong are not the same. To make the body strong, we have to exercise it, to push it, in order to make it strong. But to make the mind strong means to make it peaceful, not to go thinking of this and that. For most of us, the mind has never been peaceful. It has never had the energy of samadhi. So we must establish it within a boundary. We sit in meditation, staying with the one who knows. If we force our breath to be too long or too short, we're not balanced. The mind won't become peaceful. It's like when we first start to use a pedal sewing machine. At first we just practice pedaling the machine to get our coordination right before we actually sew anything. Following the breath is similar. We don't get concerned over how long or short or weak or strong it is. We just note it. We simply let it be, following the natural breathing. When it's balanced, we take the breathing as our meditation object. When we breathe in, the beginning of the breath is at the nose tip, the middle of the breath at the chest, and the end of the breath at the abdomen. This is the path of the breath. When we breathe out, the beginning of the breath is at the abdomen, the middle at the chest, and the end at the nose tip. Simply take note of this path of the breath at the nose tip, the chest, and the abdomen, then at the abdomen, the chest, and the tip of the nose. We take note of these three points in order to make the mind firm, to limit mental activity so that mindfulness and self-awareness can easily arise. When our attention settles on these three points, we can let them go and note the in and out breath, concentrating solely at the nose tip or the upper lip, where the air passes on its in and out passage. We don't have to follow the breath, just to establish mindfulness in front of us at the nose tip. And note the breath at this one point, entering, leaving, entering, leaving. There's no need to think of anything special. Just concentrate on this simple task for now. having continuous presence of mind. There's nothing more to do, just breathing in and out. Soon the mind becomes peaceful, the breath refined. The body and mind become light. This is the right state for the work of meditation. When sitting in meditation, the mind becomes refined, but whatever state it's in, we should try to be aware of it, to know it. Mental activity is there together with tranquility. There is vitakka. Vitakka is the action of bringing the mind to the theme of contemplation. If there is not much mindfulness, there will not be much vitakka. Then vichara, the contemplation around that theme, follows. So just to mention, vitakka is initial application and vichara is sustained application. So initially applying the attention and then sustaining the attention. Various weak mental impressions may arise from time to time, but our self-awareness is the important thing. Whatever may be happening, we know it continuously. As we go deeper, we are constantly aware of the state of our meditation, knowing whether or not the mind is firmly established. Thus, both concentration and awareness are present. To have a peaceful mind does not mean that there's nothing happening. Mental impressions do arise. For instance, when we talk about the first level of absorption, we say it has five factors, along with vitakka and vichara. Pitti, rapture, arises with the theme of contemplation, and then sukha, happiness. These four things all lie together in the mind established in tranquility. They are as one state. The fifth factor is ekagata, or one-pointedness. You may wonder how there can be one-pointedness when there are all these other factors as well. This is because they all become unified on that foundation of tranquility. Together, they are called a state of samadhi. They are not everyday states of mind, they are factors of absorption. There are these five characteristics, but they do not disturb the basic tranquility. There is vitakka, but it does not disturb the mind. Vichara, rapture and happiness arise, but do not disturb the mind. The mind is therefore as one with these factors. The first level of absorption is like this. We don't have to call it first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, and so on. Let's just call it a peaceful mind. As the mind becomes progressively calmer, it will dispense with vitakka and vichara, leaving only rapture and happiness. Why does the mind discard vitakka and vichara? This is because as the mind becomes more refined, the activities of vitakka and vichara are too coarse to remain. At this stage, as the mind leaves off vitakka and vichara, feelings of great rapture can arise, tears may gush out. But as the samadhi deepens, rapture too is discarded, leaving only happiness and one-pointedness. Until finally, even happiness goes and the mind reaches its greatest refinement. There are only equanimity and one-pointedness. All else has been left behind. The mind stands unmoving. Once the mind is peaceful, this can happen. You don't have to think a lot about it. It just happens by itself when the causal factors are ripe. This is called the energy of a peaceful mind. In this state, the mind is not drowsy. The five hindrances of sense desire, aversion, restlessness, dullness, and doubt have all fled. But if mental energy is still not strong and mindfulness is weak, there will occasionally arise intruding mental impressions. The mind is peaceful, but it's as if there's a cloudiness within the calm. It's not a normal sort of drowsiness, though. Some impressions will manifest. Maybe we'll hear a sound or see a dog or something. It's not really clear, but it's not a dream either. This is because these five factors have become unbalanced and weak. The mind tends to play tricks within these levels of tranquility. Imagery will sometimes arise when the mind is in this state through any of the senses, and the meditator may not be able to tell exactly what is happening. Am I sleeping? No. Is it a dream? No, it's not a dream. These impressions arise from a middling sort of tranquility. But if the mind is truly calm and clear, we don't doubt the various mental impressions or imagery which arise. Questions like, did I drift off then? Was I sleeping? Did I get lost? Don't arise, for they are characteristics of a mind which is still doubting. Am I asleep or awake? Here the mind is fuzzy. This is the mind getting lost in its moods. It's like the moon going behind the cloud. You can still see the moon, but the clouds covering it render it hazy. It's not like the moon which has emerged from behind the clouds, clear, sharp, and bright. When the mind is peaceful and established firmly in mindfulness and self-awareness, there will be no doubt concerning the various phenomena which we encounter. The mind will truly be beyond the hindrances. We will clearly know everything which arises in the mind as it is. We do not doubt because the mind is clear and bright. The mind which reaches samadhi is like this. Some people find it hard to enter samadhi because they don't have the right tendencies. There is samadhi, but it's not strong or firm. However, one can attain peace through the use of wisdom, through contemplating and seeing the truth of things, solving problems that way. This is using wisdom rather than the power of samadhi. To attain calm in practice, it's not necessary to be sitting in meditation, for instance. Just ask yourself, huh? What is that? And solve your problem right there. A person with wisdom is like this. Perhaps he can't really attain high levels of samadhi or jhana, although there must be some, just enough to cultivate wisdom. It's like the difference between farming rice and farming corn. One can depend on rice more than corn for one's livelihood. Our practice can be like this. We depend more on wisdom to solve problems. When we see the truth, peace arises. The two ways are not the same. Some people have insight and are strong in wisdom, but do not have much samadhi. When they sit in meditation, they aren't very peaceful. They tend to think a lot, contemplating this and that, until eventually they contemplate happiness and suffering and see the truth of them. Some incline more towards this than samadhi. Whether standing, walking, sitting or lying, enlightenment of the Dharma can take place. Through seeing, through relinquishing, they attain peace. They attain peace through knowing the truth, through going beyond doubt, because they have seen it for themselves. Other people have only little wisdom, but their samadhi is very strong. They can enter very deep samadhi quickly, but not having much wisdom, they cannot catch their defilements. They don't know them. They can't solve their problems. But regardless of whichever approach we use, we must do away with wrong thinking, leaving only right view. We must get rid of confusion, leaving only peace. Either way, we end up at the same place. There are these two sides to practice, but these two things, calm and insight, go together. We can't do away with either of them. They must go together. That which looks over the various factors which arise in meditation is sati, mindfulness. This sati is a condition which, through practice, can help other factors to arise. Sati is life. Whenever we don't have sati, we are heedless. It's as if we are dead. If we have no sati, then our speech and actions have no meaning. Sati is simply recollection. It's a cause for the arising of self-awareness and wisdom. Whatever virtues we have cultivated are imperfect if lacking in sati. Sati is that which watches over us while standing, walking, sitting and lying. Even when we are no longer in samadhi, sati should be present throughout. Whatever we do, we take care. A sense of shame will arise. We will feel ashamed about the things we do which aren't correct. As shame increases, our collectedness will increase as well. When collectedness increases, heedlessness will disappear. Even if we don't sit in meditation, these factors will be present in the mind. And this arises because of cultivating sati. Develop sati. This is the quality which looks over the work we are doing in the present. It has real value. We should know ourselves at all times. If we know ourselves like this, right will distinguish itself from wrong. The path will become clear, and cause for all shame will dissolve. Wisdom will arise. We can bring the practice all together as morality, concentration, and wisdom. To be collected, to be controlled, this is morality. The firm establishing of the mind within that control is concentration. Complete overall knowledge within the activity in which we are engaged is wisdom. The practice in brief is just morality, concentration and wisdom, or in other words, the path. There is no other way. So hopefully those words from Ajahn Chah were helpful in just reflecting on your own practice in the moment. And so let's just sit together for some time. Sadhu. Sadhu to Ajahn Chah. Was it helpful? Was it helpful? It's good. It's a good reading. And yes, yeah, so now let's do things back to front and have a quiet sit, maybe just a few words of guidance based on what Ajahn Chah was talking to, just to recollect that and bring it more into a quiet space. So if you're working with the breath as your main meditation object, just continue with that. And even if you're not, perhaps it's always good to begin, even though we're not really beginning the meditation now, we're kind of consolidating it. But anyway, after the words, moving more into silence, using the breath and the body as a way of anchoring ourselves and developing those factors of concentration that Ajahn Chah was talking about. So bringing the attention, bringing your energy, bringing your interest to this very moment and using the breath as a tool to firmly anchor you in the present moment, because the breath is always there. But without forcing the mind, without controlling it, just a gentle but firm commitment to being here now, being awake, being present with your own breathing. And as your mind becomes more refined, more peaceful, you can start to notice the more subtle movement of the breath at the tip of the nose. So we're not forcing the mind to stay there, we're just continuously but diligently bringing the attention back if it's lost or wandering in thought formations, in moods, in worries, in fantasies. And seeing how peaceful it can be if we completely let go of these things and dedicate ourselves, commit ourselves just to wanting to be here now, emptying out from the thoughts and the moods and the preoccupations. And can you notice, even just for a second, that truth, that Dharma, that Ajahn Chah was pointing to in the first reading, which is, if you see just that space in between any thought, any idea, just glimpse that space that reveals the truth of what he was highlighting, that the mind is naturally peaceful and bright and spacious. Once the wind stops fluttering the leaves. So once the mind has been established somewhat in a state, a greater state of stillness or peacefulness, you can bring that initial application of attention, vitaka, to focusing on what's happening right now in the mind, bringing full mindfulness into the processes within. Whether it be the breath, the body, the feelings, or the mind state, the four foundations of mindfulness. and this practice of initial attention, a sustained attention, means that we keep bringing the mind back whenever it wanders, gets deluded by its habitual tendencies of thinking, perceptions of self or others, or any of the five hindrances which may arise. Not liking this, liking that, starting to get drowsy, sleepy, or restless, or doubting that we actually can even meditate properly. So just seeing any of these things as factors that arise in the mind itself, as thoughts, as obstacles, and sustaining the attention back in this present moment with whatever meditation object works for you to deepen your samadhi, to deepen your concentration. But at the same time, using your wisdom factor to notice that the suffering that arises whenever we believe our thoughts, whenever we get caught up in our creating a sense of self through this thinking process, through these mental formations. And in that moment, dropping it, when one sees with wisdom how suffering arises in this very moment and how suffering ceases. The cause of suffering being the very grasping that takes place of holding on to that thought, whatever thought that might be, and 99% of the time that thought will lead us to suffering. Even if it's a pleasurable thought, it still takes us away from actually being willing to be here. Most of the time the thoughts probably aren't pleasurable. They're more likely to be some sort of worry, fear, agitation, doubt. So in seeing that, as Ajahn Chah said, with wisdom, you can drop it unless you really are willing and want to suffer. So in dropping it, it leads back to the moment where the mind is naturally peaceful. We don't have to manufacture the peaceful state. It's there, naturally, when we let go. And even if there's some unpleasant sensation in the body, we still don't have to suffer. We don't have to suffer in the mind. We can breathe through it, if possible, without forcing ourselves. Or we can simply just relax and change the posture if we need to mindfully. But recognizing that feelings, sensations in the body aren't in and of themselves suffering. It's our mental reaction to them. So just ask yourself right now, am I suffering in any way? In reaction to anything, any thought, any sound, any feeling, any smell? There's not much happening in terms of sense impressions. So if there's any suffering, it's likely to be because of the mental thoughts, the mental impressions. And seeing this with wisdom, we can let go, and our calm, our concentration can deepen. And it's important to keep checking in. Am I mindful? Am I awake? Am I actually in the present moment, investigating, knowing what's happening? Or am I, as Ajahn Chah said, kind of dead to the world by being lost in the past or fantasizing about the future? Or even in the present moment, preoccupied with thoughts, practical worries. Can I see that? Do I have the sati, the mindfulness, to know what's going on? What's arising? And in knowing what's arising, we can allow it to cease. And not being complacent in our practice of just drifting or sleeping. Of actually bringing that energy and awareness into the aliveness of this very moment. And in doing that, we can start to notice the silence, the natural silence within, the stillness within, peace. As we allow things to end, to come to cessation, it's peaceful. To be with the one who knows. This is sati, this is mindfulness. This is the Buddha, the Buddha knowing the Dhamma. In each moment. And as we come to the end of this so-called formal meditation period, it's useful to just check in again and do some sort of evaluation as to the state of your mind, recollecting how you began the meditation period, what state the mind is in, the causal factors that brought about, hopefully, some tranquility, some peace, or if there was no or not much tranquility and peace, noticing why, noting what was going on, what was stirred up or could still be stirred up within me. Was the mind taking me for a ride? Was I getting lost in something which caused me just to feel tense and agitated through the practice, to suffer? Or was I able to skillfully keep letting go, bringing mindfulness to each moment, letting go, which were the causal factors that gave rise to some stillness and peace? And developing and deepening our equanimity even in the face of whatever conditions were arising and ceasing or are still arising and ceasing. And so even though we come to an end of this formal meditation, mindfulness doesn't stop. The sati sampajana continues in each moment. It's a continuous practice, whether standing, walking, talking, eating, lying down, working. Meditation happens, mindfulness happens in each moment. And in that way, if we make it a moment by moment practice, except for when we're at this stage in sleep, then we can really see the meditation deepen and become more integrated into our lives. We see how we can let go of suffering in whatever posture we're in, whatever activity we're engaged in. These same principles and practices that we brought into the meditation tonight aren't any different from when we have our eyes open, when we're moving, when we're engaged in relationship with others. We can still bring that same commitment and wisdom, applying that in each moment. To what's happening here and now? What am I grasping? What do I need to let go of? How can I bring peace into my mind in this moment and the next moment and each moment? Each present moment as it arises. And the more we see and understand the causal factors that give rise to the natural state of calm within the mind, the sooner we can let go, the sooner we can taste peace.